Blog Talk Radio.
Background noise. Hey, welcome to another live edition of Way In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin. Today I have co-host Trey Patterson with me, and Chris will be on later in the show. A lot to talk about today, guys. We have the NBA playoffs are heating up. Missed a great game just now, if you missed it, the Lakers and OKC in a double overtime game. We'll talk a little Knicks-Hawks action. We're going to discuss Major League Baseball, the NFL draft, the running backs and the receivers. It's a big day in sports. How you doing, Trey?
Doing well, Tarvino. Doing well here in Las Vegas. I'm excited to talk about all this stuff today. A lot going on in sports, for sure.
Welcome back to the show. I know you've been doing cases and a lot of work hours in the day. Trey hasn't been able to join us in the last week or so. So welcome back to the show.
Always good. Always good to be back.
Well, we're going to start off, and I don't know if you watched it, but the Lakers-OKC game in L.A. just ended. The double overtime, Lakers pulled it off. Trey, Lakers were down 18 points in the fourth, and then Kobe Bryant woke up, and it was a great game. Did you get to see it?
You know, I caught bits and pieces of it. I saw the ending of it, which was, the overtime portion, which was incredible. Kobe Bryant, wow. I mean, I've never been a big fan of Kobe. You have. I really like the OKC coming into the playoffs here, but Kobe Bryant put on a show.
And the funny thing is, Trey, they did it without Bynum on the court. They benched him, I think, the entire fourth period and all the overtimes. I guess he just wasn't getting it done with the chemistry, and they put a guy in, a few different bench players in that just caught fire. I know Blake hit a big three in overtime, but the shots Kobe made in the to get it to overtime and in the overtime period were amazing. He had a 1 foot shot for a three off 1 foot, and it was just, I thought he was going to pass the ball. I think he thought he was too. And then it went in the hoop, and it just turned the momentum of the game around.
Yeah, I mean, and the other big key is the Lakers going to the playoffs. Paul Gasol was, all the trade talk and how amazing has he been playing the last couple of weeks. I mean, he almost had another triple-double today, 2014-9. So between him and Kobe, they're really gelling for the playoffs. And, OKC is a great team. I mean, this win double overtime really kind of almost told them, hey, you may be great, you may be young, but you're not over the hill yet. You have the Lakers to overcome.
You have to be the man, you have to beat the man. and even though OKC is better this year, they still haven't beat the Lakers in a playoff series yet. And so until they do that, Kobe just had to flex his muscles today and say, hey, remember last year? Remember the year before? So it's interesting, man. I'm excited. And all it takes is our test to get a little hot. If you have Gasol and Bryant playing like this and have Blake hitting some threes, have a couple of those role players in, get hot, the Lakers could be very dangerous coming into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they're hitting at the right time. And I think last year it was the Mavericks who kind of hit at this time. So, while a lot of people thought the Lakers maybe, were bowing down to the younger teams like the Thunder, I mean, I think this game just shows you going into the playoffs, the Lakers have a lot of odds going in here as well. And Kobe Bryant, if he stays healthy, he can shoot 40. And if Bynum gets back on the court and with Gasol pulling a triple-double almost every night, they're going to be really tough in the playoffs.
And the only thing that concerns me about the Lakers is when they play road games. They don't seem like they play too well on the road this year. And it's easy when you're in L.A., you're home, you're comfortable on a Sunday afternoon. But at the end of the day, the Lakers are 14. I think they're 14-16 on the road, and that's just not going to get it done in the playoffs. If you're going to be a true contender in the playoffs, you have to win some road games. You have to show like the Bulls and the Heat and the and OKC, they went on the road. And those are, I have OKC and Chicago in the championship, and one reason is because they went on the road.
Now, the Western Conference is clearly the better conference. I mean, I know the Bulls and the Heat are about the only teams that are really worth anything in the East. I mean, when it comes down to brass tacks. But it's that Western Conference, which is going to be just watching the Western Conference playoffs this year is going to be the really most exciting. I mean, and people think about, you even have the Spurs who are playing well. I mean, those guys, if they're all healthy, they're going to be really tough. So it's going to be a really interesting time. And yeah, I'm not so sure. I like OKC coming out just because of their youth and because of how well they played in the playoffs last year and what they learned from that experience. I mean, I don't think people realize how good Harden is. He's a sixth man, and he can put up 20 points a night. But they're going to be really interesting with all their experience they got last year. I think they're going to come out and win that West as well.
Yeah, I think Harden is one of the main reasons I have him in the championship too. You know, in the playoffs, it's always that guy off the bench that comes out of nowhere in a way, but he won't come out of nowhere, but he's still one of the reasons OKC is where they are right now. And without him, I wouldn't have them in the championship.
Exactly. I mean, you hit it right on the head there. I mean, what's the other interesting part, and we were talking about this off the air before we started, is Westbrook. I mean, he kind of has a schizophrenic personality on the court at times, but he's playing not as well as he's played this year down the stretch. I mean, he still had a double-double tonight, but, I mean, he really controls really the rest of the guys on the team. Kevin Durant scores whenever he wants to, but the rest of the guys on the team really do need Westbrook to kind of play and play team ball. So when you have Westbrook flying on the court and making crazy shots, they play less to their skill level, and that's why maybe they're losing a little bit lately. Westbrook's trying to be more of a scorer. When he takes that back seat on scoring, you see guys like Harden with 20 points. It's usually when the OKC blows somebody out. So we'll see what they learned from the playoffs last year, and they learned from games like the Lakers today.
Well, Trey, you know the home court advantage is so huge in the NBA. When the OKC plays at home, Trey, they're like another team. They put it on another level, and it looks like to me OKC's in cruise control a little bit. They're not wanting to get anyone hurt. They're just trying to make sure they make it to the playoffs and guarantee themselves that 2 seed, which they already have, I think. But let's face it, the Spurs, they've impressed this year. But in the second round of the playoffs, I think they're going to lose to a good Memphis team. I think that's when OKC will get their home court advantage back. And they're going to be impossible to beat at home, OKC is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Interesting that the people are sort of looking past the Spurs. I know they had the whole upset last year. And Memphis is a lot better than people realize. I mean, where did they come from? They've gotten really good really fast in the last couple of years. And that's an actually interesting pick, Memphis. But how disappointed are you in Dallas this year? Did you see them coming up struggling as much as they have? I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. But
I'm glad you brought Dallas up, because what happened, man? I heard that their owner said he didn't care about this year. He's waiting till next year anyway to get some free agents. But, I mean, your owner says that too. It looks like Dallas is taking this season off.
It really does look like, I mean, again, they're going to make the playoffs. They're in the playoffs. That's certainly, when you're looking at the West, that's nothing to shake your, to hold your head down about. But what about the champions from last year? I expected them to come out a little bit harder this year, maybe showing them that they've hit that elite status and not the team that loses every year in the playoffs. And this year, they just really have looked like the old team before they made that playoff run last year. So we'll see if the magic happens for them again this year. But I don't know. I've been very disappointed with their regular season.
Well, Trey, they're not going to surprise anybody this year in the playoffs. I think they're going to play Dallas. They're going to play OKC in the first round, and they're going to get annihilated in the first round of the playoffs. So, Mark Cuban, you can go ahead and make a vacation in the next week or so, because that's all you're going to be around to play. They are going to get trounced by OKC. But the Memphis, let's go back to Memphis. I have them making it to the Western Conference Finals, playing OKC. So I have OKC getting past the Lakers once the Lakers take care of the Nuggets. And I just think Memphis is that team you don't want to play right now. They don't have superstar on their team, really, but they're a gritty team. They always show up to play, and they're gonna take away your strength during a game. It's hard to beat Memphis. I'm surprised that a lot of people don't have them going further in their playoff predictions. But what do you think about Memphis?
They're a solid team. And it's funny, as you said, you're talking about the Lakers. I was watching a Meta World Peace get ejected from the game on the highlights. But, yeah, they're one of those teams that that I just am really shocked that more people don't talk about. Maybe it's because they're Memphis. But they just have – and they don't have that great player. I mean, who even knows three players off of Memphis who aren't, you know, diehard NBA fans? But, you know, Rudy Gay is certainly underrated. You know, he scores 20 a night, just about. But they're going to be pretty tough in the playoffs. I mean, last year they showed some tenacity in the playoffs. They got a little bit of tested. So we'll see what they can do this year. I mean, that's not a bad pick. I mean, I don't know if they're going to go that far. I don't think they can make it that far personally. But I do think they're going to be very interesting in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you go to the – let's talk about the Hawks a minute. I mean, here's a chance. You're at home on Sunday. You're playing the Knicks. You have a chance to get that fourth seed and get home court advantage over the Celtics, and you lose to the Knicks at home. I just don't think the Hawks are ready yet. I don't know what they're waiting on, but they're not ready to play big boy basketball yet. And it's like all the Hawks fans around here in Atlanta are just thinking this is their year, but I just don't see the Hawks beating the Celtics in the first round of the playoffs. Boston's playing good basketball right now. And I think their veteran leadership is good enough to get them through that first round. What do you think?
Yeah, the Hawks are one of those teams that I think every year I would like them to be just a little bit better, you know, given that, you know, I grew up in that area as well. Yeah, I root for the Hawks, but they are the team that always, in the last couple of years, seem to maybe win a series, but they just don't seem to have the piece to put their talent together because they're – a pretty decently talented ball club, and they have a lot of shooters on that team. Good, I mean, they have an overall really good team, but you're right, they never can seem to put it together. And I think the game today, you know, when you're playing the Knicks, they had their shot, and they just don't seem to want to come out and have that win that puts them over the top. And so I agree with you. I mean, why not pick Boston if you're picking games? Because they have the veteran leadership, and they've won the critical game. They've won the crucial game where the Hawks really haven't seemed to do that over the last few years with that core players that they have now, you know, Josh Smith and those guys, haven't put together that signature win that makes you want to believe that they can run this playoff series and beat a team like the Celtics.
And if you want to weigh in, listeners, number is 646-716-5564. Here in about 15 minutes, Carl Warren from 680 The Fan is going to join us, the radio station here in Atlanta. He's going to join us for a small segment. But if you're the Bulls, Trey, you know, you're playing probably the Knicks in the first round, and you're going to win that. But I'm a little scared if I'm a Bulls fan having to possibly play Boston in the second round, because at any time Boston can take off, and you know as well as I do from watching them play, they're capable of it.
Yeah, I mean – The problem with the Bulls this year, and obviously we all know how talented Rose is, and that team as a whole, they're actually pretty deep. But the problem is, and I watched the game yesterday, I think last year with the Bulls and Rose came back, I didn't see the explosiveness that really sets Rose apart from other point guards. And if he is coming back and he's 89-90% on his legs, that's not going to get them through the playoffs. That's not going to get them through the Heat, and that may not even get them through the Celtics. And so that's a really good point. I would agree with you. The Bulls, you know, maybe they want to finish resting Rose if he's not healthy, because I don't think they're going to get anything out of playing him right now in the last few games. We'll see, but I do. I really am skeptical about the Bulls running right now.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. And the bottom half of that bracket, it's interesting to me. It looks like probably the toughest of all the divisions. And you have the Miami Heat, the 76ers, the Pacers, and the Magic. I'm not scared of the Magic now, especially since Dwight Howard's played the way he has, you know, and he's out. And I think Orlando's a non-factor. They should find another team to put in their place just to save the embarrassment. The Pacers, Trey, are playing very good, and the Sixers, at any time, they can turn it on. So that Miami's not out of the woods. I know you have Miami going to the finals, but if Dwayne Wade's not healthy, I don't know if they can make it past the 76ers.
Yeah, I think Miami might be doing what the Spurs have been doing in the years past. And that's, you got a core group of good, really good players, and there's really no reason to sit them at this point. Yeah, I look at the East, and I am not scared if I'm the Heat of any of them. I mean, the 76ers, I mean, they're a decent ball club. But if you look at their record against the playoff teams, it's not good. Jrue Holiday, I mean, a lot of people are really high on him. I look at him as a player who's played well against the smaller teams, you know, the less competitive teams. But when he gets to the Miami Heat type of caliber, I don't see a lot of great games from him. And so if I'm the Miami Heat, I'm going to rest my guys, give them the rest they need, and then run through that bottom of that division. Because you're right, I mean, Orlando is not going to win a series. And I'm not too concerned with, you know, the New Yorks and the Atlantas and, you know, whoever comes out of that bottom, the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm just not concerned about that.
Yeah, if Dwayne Wade's healthy and the big three are healthy, Trey, there's no way I cannot put Miami in the finals. It's just, you know, last year was their year just to get accustomed to one another, and that was their excuse year. That was their mulligan in a way. So if they're healthy, there's no way I can see anybody keeping them from making the finals in the East. But I just wonder, I would love to see an OKC Heat matchup in the finals. Could you imagine how big that would be?
Yeah, I think everyone who is not in New York or LA would love to see that. I mean, obviously, those are the bigger markets, and that's what the NBA likes to see. But I think from a simple basketball standpoint, you know, being a Mavericks, I'd love to see the Mavericks do another run because, you know, I'm a big Dirk fan. But I just see when I watch the Heat and the Thunder play, it would be such an entertaining series from a basketball standpoint. And, that would be primetime basketball. Kevin Durant versus LeBron James, Dwayne Wade versus, you know, Westbrook. I mean, you're talking about some matchups there that could go crazy. That could be a very interesting series.
That would be a dream matchup. I couldn't imagine. I mean, I think, you know, I've always been a Kobe fan, Trey, and I think Kobe, up until this year, was the best player in the NBA. And throughout this year, I've seen Kevin Durant take over that. And I think one championship under his belt this year would solidify it. But Kevin Durant is one of those players that I admire. I like his. He's a blue-collar player that he goes to work every day. Westbrook is that player. You know, he's, Bob, like you said, schizophrenic in a way. You never know how he's going to show up. But if Westbrook's on and Durant's on, you might as well just pack it up and go home. And I don't think there's other teams besides really the Heat that can say that. You know, I mean, the star power for those two teams is unreal. And in L.A., Kobe's the only person there, really. And you got Gasol's playing better. But he's not going to take over a game like Westbrook or Durant will.
No, that's a good point. But, I mean, this, you know, who knows? One of the things about the NBA is that, you know, every once in a while we get a surprise. I don't think this year is that year because I think there's just some very top-heavy teams at the top of talent-wise. But who knows? I mean, wouldn't it be funny if Memphis won the West? I mean, that would just put the NBA on its head.
But Trey, I like this short season in a way. It's made me watch NBA a little more, where it's not as drawn out and long. You know, like baseball is a forever season, and basketball seemed like that. But with this month, you know, they shorted the month. I like it. I think they ought to think about doing this going forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anything where you get to the playoffs faster, what I like about the NBA and what makes me actually, you know, the only time I ever look at an NHL score is during the playoffs, and that's because you have a number of teams who can win it, and there's so many surprises when you have, you know, this many teams in the playoffs. In baseball, you just don't have that as much because you have, you know, four teams in the playoffs, and that's what baseball really gets wrong, is not creating enough excitement in the playoffs sometimes. I think they're starting to figure it out with the expanded playoffs this year. But you're right. I mean, the NBA playoffs, it's exciting. We're already there. You know, the regular season, for the most part, doesn't need to be that long, especially when you have eight teams at each division that makes our conference that makes it. I mean, generally speaking, it's not hard to figure out who those teams are, and especially in the East when you have a sub 500 team, you know, who might play it, who might make it in the playoffs. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a cutoff in the NBA. Just like, you know, if you're under 500, you can't get in the playoffs. I hate that rule where it allows eight teams in. There should be years to where it's a competitive playoff. And you know what I'm talking about. Only a playoff is going to be competitive. Now, if you're a team that's 500 and you would make an exciting first round, you're in. You know, but if you don't, it's just a judgment call and it should be voted. But I just see this year that Memphis team, Trey, I just have a feeling. I don't know why. I just feel like Memphis is going to beat the Spurs. And I'll tell you why the Spurs, they're older. And I know I said it earlier, and I'm very surprised that they've made it this far and have done this well. But I think it's coming to an end. And I think it's going to come into – I mean, I know the Utah Jazz is not going to beat them in the first round. I'm not saying that. But that second round when Memphis comes in, I think that's where San Antonio is going to lose. And it's just going to make an exciting playoff when you have Memphis coming out of it. The Lakers, they better say a prayer before they play OKC because this is the last time they play before the playoffs. And I just think it's bad news for my Lakers.
Yeah, you very well could be. I mean, like I said, that Memphis team, they're a ball team. They don't have that guy who stands out, but they certainly play well together.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, we're going to wrap up the NBA, but, you know, it's just exciting. I think, Trey, do the playoffs start next weekend?
Yeah, exactly. I think we have a few games of this week and then the playoffs start, yeah.
Okay, I have OKC and the Heat playing with OKC winning. I think you have the same. I think Chris has OKC and the Bulls playing for it, I believe. So it's not a shocker to see everyone on OKC because they are the best team in the league. I think they'll get it done this year, and we'll see next Saturday. We'll break down next Sunday the NBA playoffs, the seeds, and our predictions once everything's set in stone. But oh, man, did you watch the Red Sox-Yankees game yesterday?
I hate getting caught up in the Red Sox-Yankees hype because, you know, I'm generally root against those two teams, but watching an epic collapse like that in any scale is a little entertaining for baseball. I mean, we talked about the bullpen woes, you know, before the season started, but, man, it is bad in Boston. That was just an atrocious train wreck of relief pitching. That was just not entertaining to watch for anybody except for people who love hitting. But it was very, I mean, that was just, the balls were getting hit all over the place against those guys.
You know, I just watched that, and I'm asking myself, I think I made one of my friends mad last night. I texted him, laughing at the Red Sox, and he's a big Red Sox fan, so I won't say his name on air, but it was just hilarious to me to watch Boston give up a 9-run lead. Even though I hate the Yankees and the Red Sox, it was just funny to see a 9-run lead blown by Bobby Valentine. And it's like you said, exactly, it's the bullpen. If I'm Boston, I'm in panic mode right now, Trey. And I know it's early in the season, and I know everybody's just starting, but they have zero pitching, man, none. And it's going to kill them. You're playing against Tampa and the Yankees, and even the Orioles are playing well. You have Toronto that's not a pushover. The Red Sox are in some serious trouble.
That bullpen is just so bad. And we talked about it, you know, going into the season. But, I mean, I don't know that anybody, and everybody said, oh, you got to watch the bullpen. And I think everybody saw it. But to watch it be so bad and to watch them pitch so poorly, I think – it's a little surprising even to those of us who said that they're going to have bullpen woes. I mean, they just the guys they have in there, I can't believe there's no one in their minor leagues that could come in and have a low 6 ERA. I mean, because I think all of their bullpen guys have like a 6 above 6 ERA. So, you know, they got to have something they could go to. I mean, but it's time to start cutting guys and sending them down. I mean – because you can say it's the big league guys. I mean, some of those guys have to be able to get people out.
Okay, Trey, I'm going to do a little advertising here to the Red Sox. I'm available for $2 million per year per season, and I will come in and close the games for you. And I promise you, for $2 million per year, I think my ERA will be probably under one. What do you think?
I think unless you're throwing the knuckleball like Charlie Huff, I think the Red Sox aren't going to buy into that. I mean, you know, here's what the Red Sox should be doing is they should be scouring other farm systems for a decent young arm. I mean, they could probably just one or two players, and maybe even one pitcher, could actually maybe get their bullpen in order. And I know they have Bailey, and he's coming back, and maybe July or August. But the point is one guy who can pitch a certain inning. You know, hey, this is our seventh inning guy, or this is our long guy, can actually get the rest of those in order. Because I don't see a whole lot of people who understand their role at that bullpen, and I haven't seen Bobby Valentine use them that way. I mean, he kind of puts in whoever he wants at whatever time. Maybe Aceves is his closer, and he tried to put him in the eighth inning in that big collapse. But I mean, that clearly is not the way to do it. I mean, that's not working for those guys in the bullpen and those egos in the bullpen. So I think they need to go out and maybe grab a different arm out of somebody else's minor leagues, or maybe even their own, who can maybe have a role, and maybe that helps them out. But if not that, they're going to have a long May and a long June coming up.
But if I'm Boston, I'm going to Atlanta, and I'm begging for Kimbrel or Ventures, either one of those guys. I know Atlanta won't give up Kimbrel, but, you know, when I look at the Braves trade, I think they have a shot this year because of their bullpen. And they're starting pitching young, and I think it's doing well. I mean, they've won 10 out of 11, or actually 10 out of 12 they lost today. But if you do not have pitching, and that's why I'm not a big Yankee supporter this year, believer, I don't think they really have it either. Well, what do you think about the Yankees' shot with their pitching staff? I'm not impressed by CC Sabathia, really.
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about it going into the season, one of the things, that's exactly what I hit on, I was like, none of those arms in their starting rotation. I think their bullpen is okay, but their starting rotation does not scare me in any way. I mean, I'll be surprised. I'll tell you, the biggest surprise, though, is Ben Nova out of the Yankees. He's 3-0, and he's actually pitched a bit very well. So they might be okay, but I still think that back end of their rotation is going to cause them problems. And I do think that's an issue for them. I mean, we'll see if Nova, I mean, if he pitches as well as he does, maybe they go a lot further without bullpen, because having him has been really good for them.
But it's just hard to see Boston play, and I'm not a fan, but it's sad when you see a 9-run collapse. And you know, after the yesterday, they were 4.5 games back out of their division, and they're dead last. And you know, the Yankees and Tampa really haven't started playing yet, and they will. You know, so Boston better find something fast, or they're going to be 10 games out before we know it. And it's going to be too late in the season to come back. I mean, it's hard to gain ground on teams that are better than you. I mean, it's just point blank. It's different when you're down and you are the best team and you know it's coming around, but you can't get down to the Yankees or Tampa. It's because it's going to be very difficult, because both of those teams are explosive. And Boston can hit with anybody, but when you're giving up, when you're getting shell-shocked, I think, how many home runs did Teixeira have yesterday, Dre? Two?
He had two home runs, yeah.
And he doesn't hit until usually June, so you know Boston's pitching terrible.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing about that as well, is if you look at the schedule that the Yankees and Tampa have played in particular, they've had a tougher start than a lot of teams. And so Tampa is going to hit their Twins and Indians and those stretches, and they're going to start winning a lot more games than they have now. And they have a lot of young arms. And it often takes young arms a little bit longer to sort of mature in a season. So like the Matt Moore, who hasn't really pitched well, you know, Jeff Neenan's 1-2. I mean, these guys are all going to start hitting their stride at some point, I would expect. And that's when their schedule is going to loosen up a little bit, and those guys are going to start winning. And if Boston's still having their rotation problems, and their back end problems, then you know, it's not, the league's not going to get any lighter for them. They're just going to keep pulling games back.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about another team, and we will touch more on baseball later after our guest comes on. But the Phillies, are you in panic mode right now if you're a Philly?
You know, I don't think I am. If I'm a Phillies, they're what, like 5-9 or 6-9 or something like that. They're not. Out of it yet. I mean, the East right now has been kind of crazy. I mean, the Mets have played a lot better than I think anybody thought, at least maybe me. The Marlins have been struggling. I think that the East is still wide open. Nobody's really running away with it. So I'm a Phillies fan, which is going to be hard to tell you. It's remain a little patient. Their starting pitching has been really good to start the season off. Their bats are just going to have to come around. I mean, they got a lot of guys in the DL still. But, I mean, I think patience, and if the Phillies are anywhere near 500 when it comes June or June time frame, they're going to start, and those hitters start coming back, they're going to be just fine.
Well, Trey, I know, I think it was last night or the night before, Cliff Lee went on the DL. And,
yeah.
You know, that's one of the best pitchers in baseball. But I have a question. Why was he pitching? I believe it was the 10th or 11th inning. He was still pitching. This early in the season, that's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, running your guys out there this early in the season for a lot of pitches, I mean, you could have these kind of issues. I mean, Cliff Lee is not a young guy either. And I'll be honest, I don't know the situation off that game, but that would surprise me if they were doing that. And
it was a 1-0 game, Trey. 1-0, Matt Cain, the Giants, and it was just a pitching duel. It was a great pitching game. But at some point, as a manager, you're paid to make the decision. And I know Cliff Lee's probably, the coach went over there and said, hey, you know, let's take you out, let's rest you. And he's probably like, no. You know, you have to have control over your players for their well-being and let them know, hey, I'm taking you out for you, not because I don't think you can get this out. And it came back and bit them. I mean, that's a terrible coaching move this early in the season. I understand if it's the playoff race or you're in the playoffs and that happens. Once a player has his rhythm, you know, he has his routine going for the season. You know as well as I do, these pitchers have a routine. And it takes them a while to get their arm in condition and shape to be able to pitch that. So I just think it was a boneheaded move by the Phillies, and it could have cost them the season if he's out of any kind of time.
Well, with their hitting problems, I mean, losing a pitcher like Cliff Lee, I mean, is going to have an impact. I mean, I think they're going to be a little bit better than most teams because they have Doc Holliday, who's not going to give up over 3 runs just about any – every time he pitches. So they're not going to have that 5-game losing streak, more than likely. But, I mean, losing Cliff Lee for any period of time when you got, you know, Howard and Utley on the DL is gonna cost them games. But the good thing about them right now is, other than the Braves who got hot quick, no other team in the NL East right now is going to, you know, go off on that 10-game winning streak right now to pull themselves away from the Phillies. So I think when it comes down to June, they're going to be in the race, and that's going to be trouble for the other teams.
All right, Trey, we have our guest on the line. Carl's on the line. You there, Carl?
Yeah, hey, Brian, how you doing?
I'm good. How's it going?
Doing well. I completely agree with what he was saying, too, with Philadelphia. I mean, they're down right now, but, you know, and it could be bad for a little while with Cliff Lee being gone, but they're going to bounce back. I mean, they're too good of a ball club and too well coached to not be there in the hunt. I mean, just look at the top of the National League East right now with Washington. I mean, that's got to be shocking to everybody right now what's going on with them. And you know they're going to come back to the pack. So I think it's going to be pretty tight going into the summer. And just with Philadelphia being able to hang in there, you'd be able to keep an eye on them for, you know, the Charge along with Atlanta. You know, I would think would be the top two teams to be watching out for in the National League East, as everybody predicted. It's just kind of a iffy start for Philadelphia, but they'll bounce back.
Yeah, Kurt, I look at Philadelphia, though, and it concerns me that ever since Ron Howard signed that big contract a couple of years ago, he just hasn't produced, and now there's no Chase Utley. And, you know, Jimmy Rollins is getting old. And if Cliff Lee's out, and I saw Roy Halladay last night lose, I think, 5-1 to the Padres, but I'm panicking, and I know you two disagree with me, but I'm panicking if I'm Philadelphia right now. I have to have some kind of offense. I have to find someone that has to wake up and hit the ball.
Well, they're only 7-7, so you can't really panic just yet. I mean, I was one of the ones, as a big Atlanta fan, panicking when they were all in 4, but, you know, I didn't verbalize it. I was just kind of thinking it to myself. But now see what they've done. They just ran off, you know, an 8-2 record. So right now it's so early that you can get right back into it. So I don't think you need to panic too much. Halliday's never going to have, you know, 2 back-to-back losses like he did yesterday. So he'll get it straight. I mean, Lee's going to be a big loss for him. But they've got a good pitching in their minor league system that they can call on some guys, too. So I don't think the Philly fans should be panicking just yet. Now, if they run off a streak of five more losses or something like that, then you got to worry about it.
So do you think the Braves? Let's talk on the Braves since you're a Braves fan as well. So this winning streak they're on, I think they've won 10 out of 12. Why did they start off so slow, do you think? And then what triggered this streak?
I think it's just a matter of them getting that chemistry. I mean, they're with their second year with Freddie. They got some of the new players, but most of the guys gelling. And I think the biggest thing that catapulted them into that winning streak was getting Chipper back. I think they were all ready to play with Chipper. You know, he's a team leader. Every time he's out there, he just brings the team to another level. And then when they have to start the season without him, it just kind of put them in a tailspin, and their pitching just wasn't really there, and then everything started to click. I don't think they bought into what Scott Fletcher and Greg Walker wanted them to do, but now as they started to do that, you can see that they're just tearing it up. I mean, they had a bad outing today against Ian Kennedy, you know, and that was due to a grand slam, and that came from a walk, and, you know, anytime you walk somebody, that you're going to fall into some trouble there. But I think just a matter of four games really can't tell what a season is, and that's what everybody, even though everybody was like, oh, no, we're going to have to start panicking, and, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I was kind of panicking myself, but, you know, this is a long 162-game season. You can't judge by just four games. So I think as they were able to kind of mesh and get more and more, the guys who may not have pitched all during spring training and the other guys that kind of got together, I think it just became more of a chemistry for the team, and they were able to put together what they've been doing. And Jay Hay has just been tearing it up, Martin Prado. I mean, it's just all – it's been a team effort. It's not just been, you know, one or two guys. I mean, look at what Freddie Freeman just did in Arizona. He's on fire.
Oh, he is. He's that one player that they had to get heated up. And if he's hot all year, Carl, I don't know. I'm sorry for the other teams that's playing the Braves because, you know, he was a big prospect, right? He was one of the top in the Braves organization. And I know a lot of people were disappointed last year, but it looks like he figured out how to hit the opposite field now.
Well, Brian, I thought he came up a little bit too early last year. I said that to a lot of my friends. I thought he wasn't ready. I mean, his size, he didn't look – just look how he looked last year to how he looks this year with the size and everything. It seems like he's done the work and built his body up to match like an MLB body. I mean, it may sound funny saying it that way, but look at what he looked like last year. He looked like the kid he was, and now this year he looks like a man. I mean, he's put together well. I mean, he's doing it on the defensive side. You're exactly right. He's going opposite field, being able to hit the other way, not trying to take the ball, pull at it so much. He's just doing everything, and it's all coming together for him. He started out slow, too, so that was part of it, why they had such a slow start. When he started out slow, now he's got everything going and generating. He's probably the hottest hitter in the National League besides Matt Kemp right now, and probably will be up for the National League Player of the Week. That's just how he's been doing it, and that's how the Braves have been doing it, just utilizing all different players at different times. Jason Hayward had several good games. He's still tearing it up. You know, Martin Prado, the pitching staff. I mean, just look what Mike Minor and Beachy and all those guys did out in Arizona, and they just continue to improve each day.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what the Braves can do with this young team they have. And if it all comes together, I really can see them being a factor in the National League. So I know everyone had the Phillies preseason, even I did, to win the East. And it is early, but if they continue to play well and develop, I think they have a good shot to win the East.
Yeah, I think if they keep playing like they are, playing like a team and a cohesive unit like they are, and the pitching continues to stay as it is and improve as the young guys get there, I think the one weak link on it right now, and I hate to say this because he was such a big part of the past 2 years, is Jair Jurgens. He's just struggling right now, and I don't know if they know what to do with him. I mean, because, you know, I don't think, and what everybody's thinking is Delgado shouldn't go back to the minors right now, but maybe Jair Jurgens should. Huddy comes back, but you can't say that about a two-year major league starter right now after just two or three starts. You've got to let him work his way through it. Granted, injuries were a big part of it last year, but I think Jurgens right now is the weak link on this pitching staff.
I trust Freddie Gonzalez to make the right decision. I think he's a great manager, and just like Bobby Cox, in my opinion, I think he's smart enough to realize when it's time to pull the plug and send him down to the minors. But I want to change gears with you just a second, and And I know Georgia played their game, their spring game, last week, or was it yesterday?
Last week. It was last Saturday.
Okay. Last week. So I know this coming into this year, you know, they lost to LSU in the SEC championship game, and Georgia had a great season last year. And then that heartbreaking loss to Michigan State, how's it looking in Georgia this year?
I think it's going to be up to what the offensive line does. You know, we're going to be a solid defense. The Bulldogs defense was ranked in the top five last year. I think that's just going to improve with the year of experience to the guys, the younger guys that had to step in and play. And I think the defense is going to be solid. I know the running backs look like they're going to be solid. You know, we've got another one of the number one running backs in the country coming in with Marshall, and and also Todd Gurley is another top running back coming in to fill Isaiah Crowell, and you also have still returning. Just totally drew a blank on Richard Samuel. And he'll be back, probably lining up more as a fullback. And Ken Malcolm, who was pretty much the offense in the GDA game last week, scoring two touchdowns. He has really, really improved and matured since last year, when he was almost at the point where he was going to transfer. He went into Coach Rick's office, said, you know, Coach, I just don't think I'm getting enough playing time to where I should be. I'm really, really considering about transferring and leaving Georgia. And Coach Rick said, okay, well, son, I just wish you would think about it. You know, and 2 days later he came back. Since that time, he has kind of just done the work, put the work in, and Coach Rick has talked a lot about that, about how much he's improved to the point where they think they're going to see a lot of playing time when Ken Malcolm, he was known as Boo Malcolm, wanted everybody to call him Boo Malcolm because that's what his nickname was in school. And one thing he said, he goes, don't worry about calling me Boo now, right now. I haven't earned that right yet. Just call me Ken Malcolm. Ken's going to come in, and I think he's going to do the work. He's going to be more of a power back. You know, we've got Marshall going on the outside, and Todd Gurley and Isaiah Crowell will be more of the outside backs. But as far as a power back, watch Ken Malcolm this year. I think he's going to do a lot, especially if we get that offensive line solidified, and that's going to be the big question. You know, we lost a lot of guys from that offensive line, you know, including the signal caller on the offensive line, the quarterback up there, Ben Jones. So it's going to be really tough to replace him, but David Andrews looks like a big candidate for that. They really like the sophomore coming up this year. They like what he's been able to do in spring practice, and they really think he's maybe just a little bit undersized, but they really like what he's doing as far as knowing all the plays and what everybody else has to do on the line. So they're really fired up about him. And I think the question mark is going to be on the left tackle, and that's going to be a question mark until the summer, fall, when John Theus comes in, the five-star recruit. And if that line can solidify, I think Georgia, you know, can contend again, and we'll probably be there at the Dome for the SEC championship once again.
Yes, but speaking of that, you know, they're my favorite, you know, the favorite to win the East. And I think they're a very good football team, but also the schedule's in their favor again. Not having to play Alabama, LSU, or Arkansas, it really helps them to, in my mind, stay healthy and keep their confidence going because, you know, early in the season, they don't have South Carolina this year, and I know Rambo's out, correct? For how many games? Four games?
Yeah, Rambo's out for four games. We lose Brandon Smith for two, and we lose Sanders Cummings for two also. So we're going to be without those three guys. You know, you said we don't play Alabama, but the Bulldogs play Missouri, and that was filled into that gap, and that's going to be a tough game. That's the Georgia's first game on the road in the SEC next season, and that's going to be without all three of those players. So that's going to be a tough one going into there without a proven secondary guys like Bakari Rambo, Sanders Cummings, and Brandon Smith. So it'll be very interesting to see how they bounce back from that. But I think you're right. The schedule does kind of favor Georgia not having to play Alabama and South Carolina right away with the new way they're scheduled. And I think Spurrier had a little bit of fun with that, you know, last week when he was saying, you know, I really kind of liked playing them the second game of the week. You know, well, he always counted on 2-3 guys being out for one thing or another. So, you know, Spurrier just being Spurrier. But I do believe the schedule does favor Georgia. And if they can get by, you know, Missouri in that first SEC road game and you know, because Buffalo is who they start out with, and that shouldn't be a problem. But if they can get by Missouri in that first SEC road game, then they should be off to a good running start. And like you said, build that momentum and that confidence with that offensive line.
But the thing that impresses me about Georgia, and it does every year, the quarterback play. It's like every season Georgia has a Matthew Stafford type quarterback, and I just don't see how they keep getting that. I know Auburn can't. It seems like Cam Newton was a one hit wonder for us, but I'm very impressed with the quarterback play at Georgia, and it's one of the reasons I have them to win the East for sure.
Yeah, Aaron Murray, he's coming in, and he is going to be probably top two or three quarterbacks in the SEC going in this year. And Murray just has that offense. He's going to be a redshirt junior. He's pretty much got the offense down pat, back and forth, back of his hand, knows all that. He's going to be able to open it up a little bit more this year, with the running game, trying to throw out the bubble screens and using the tight end a little bit more, the wide receivers. He's losing Malcolm Mitchell over to the defensive side of the ball to try to help out the Bulldogs with those losses on the defensive side that we had in the secondary with Bakari Rambo, Brandon Smith being out, Brandon Boykin being gone. One of the other suspensions we've failed to mention was Ogletree. He's going to be out for a game or two. So that's another big guy that we're going to have to lose. So the defense has got a lot of work to do in those first couple of games. But Aaron Murray has just grown his way into this position. And he is, like I said, one of the top five, probably one or two in the SEC at quarterback this year. And behind him, I mean, they're even talking about just redshirting Hudson Mason so they can keep, because they really like his progress there. So you'll see one of the redshirt freshman quarterbacks backing him up this year coming in, and that is Christian LeMay, who will be a redshirt freshman out of Butler, North Carolina. So if everything goes well where they can get Hudson Mason to be able to sit and get a redshirt season, they haven't officially said it, but that's what the rumors are because they want to get him his playing time once Murray leaves, because they're really – he's, basically kind of doing what DJ Shockley said. I'm going to stay. I'm going to play behind. I'm going to learn everything I can. But then they want to give him that opportunity, whereas before, if they didn't redshirt him, then he would be graduating right after Aaron Murray and wouldn't really get too much of a look. But you're exactly right. Aaron Murray has just become one heck of a quarterback in the SEC. And not only can he do it with his arm, he can do it with his legs. Prefer not to have to see him do that as much, because you don't want to get them dinged up, but you've got the quarterbacks behind him that can help out if need be. And it all goes back to that offensive line. If we can block and give them time, then Georgia is going to be able to pretty much, with, like you said, the schedule and everything, punch their ticket to the SEC championship and try to repeat getting back there for the second year in a row.
Yeah, I think the dividends for the pay were huge when his first season as a rookie. He played as a rookie. I think he was a redshirt freshman, but I mean that first season, he took his lumps and he had some great games as a freshman. So I think last year was just a preview of what you're going to see this year. I think he's going to have a very successful year and possibly could be the best quarterback in the SEC.
You're exactly right, Brian. I think the one thing he would want to do is which a lot of people will say is probably what he has to work on, is just cut down on some of the interceptions. And I think a lot of those interceptions come from him trying to force the ball into somewhere where he knows he can get it in there because he's got the arm strength, but he just tries to force it in sometimes. And if he can cut down on just a few of those interceptions, then he'll be that much better of a quarterback.
I have one question about Mark Richt, and I know he just signed an extension, so give me a scenario this season. What could happen if it would cause him not to be able to come back?
Well, he signed an extension, so I don't see that. I think Mark Richt will be there unless there's a complete breakdown on all systems. Because with the way Rick's got it, he's got the program, and the way Georgia likes it going. I mean, if you look at it, those guys that are suspended for those first couple of games are suspended because Georgia has the toughest discipline policy in the SEC. There's some programs where if your first offense, you just get like a slap on the wrist. With your first offense with Georgia, you're out one ball game. Second offense, you're out two ball games or four ball games. So he's got the discipline down, and that's why everybody looks at Georgia and thinks it's not discipline. It's because it's so strict. That's why they're always getting reported if something happens, whereas at Alabama or somewhere like that, and a friend of mine sent me this, and I was trying to find it today, but I couldn't find it, but just showing the different things you have to do at all the football programs throughout the SEC to be a warranted for a suspension, and Georgia's is by far the strictest. But if they start out 0-5 or 0-6 or, you know, have a horrible season like that where they go 6-7 or something, then they may not return. But I don't think he's going to look at it for this year because of the offensive line. So I think they'll give them one more year as far as not one more year, but a year after this year if something were to happen, due to like an incredible breakdown because of the youth that will be coming in on that offensive line. But I could see Mark Richt being there for a long time. I think he's kind of in the mold of Bobby Bowden where he's going to stay until they actually force him out. And that's kind of what he said in his press conference when he took the job at Georgia. He goes, I'm going to be a Bulldog until they ask me to leave. So I don't think he'll go anywhere else. I don't think he'd want to go to the NFL with the success there. I think he likes it at Georgia, and I think the people at Georgia love having Mark Richt around, not only for the program and what it's doing, but the discipline and the graduation success in Georgia.
Yeah. And the recruiting. That's how I look at a coach. If I can tell if a coach is on his way out, when the recruiting, you know, starts going downhill, but it just seems like Georgia's recruiting keeps going straight up, so. Every season,
yeah,
Atlanta needs like top running backs, top linemen, defensive players. It's just like a hotbed here in Georgia for these recruits, and they're all wanting to go play at Georgia. So I'm impressed with the way he's been able to recruit with all these SEC powerhouses like LSU and Alabama.
And I
very
think
impressed.
I think he's just because he's a straight shooter. I mean, he tells it. A lot of people don't like his I wouldn't say don't like his Christian beliefs, but don't like that he's very expressive of them. But a lot of these football players who were brought up that way and brought up with that kind of family life kind of gravitate toward it and look at it as a second father away from home. And I think the parents like that too. So, you know they have a coaching staff. They also look at Georgia's record of players in the NFL. So they know that system, which is a pro-style system, is going to get you to the next level. I think that's what he likes what people like about that as far as the recruits do. They can look at the success of Georgia players in the NFL. Even if they didn't get a lot of playing time at Georgia, they go to that next level. And just because of that ability and what kind of style and system they were in, they have that success at the next level. And I think that's a big help for them as well, getting the big recruits, like you said, and off to another big start again this season.
Chris or Trey, do you have any questions for Carl?
Yeah,
I have a question.
Okay.
Sorry, Chris, I didn't know you were there.
That's fine. Go ahead, Trey.
Carl, hey, I had a question for you, about going on to SEC football. You talk about Mark Richt, and I'm a Florida State guy, so you kind of stole him from us. How important do you think he's been to your program to solidify basically Georgia in the next 10 years?
I think he's very important. I think just because of what he does, what he brings to the table, being able to bring in the good coaches, bringing in the quality recruits, just keeping the Georgia program going. And I can't speak to 10 years down the road because, you know, that's too far down, but I would say 5 years down the road, if you continue building this way, I mean, you could get to a national championship. Like you said, he's building this program similar to the way Bobby Bowden, I kind of alluded to that, to it already. I mean, he wants to have a program that just keeps rebuilding and reloading, not even rebuilding, reloading every year, bringing in the new recruits, fitting them in there, getting them playing time if they can. If there's a backlog at the position, then they'll redshirt them. But if not, if they're capable of playing, he's going to get them in there. And I think that's what builds and keeps reloading a program down the road, and that's what he seems to have done. And it kind of stems from his time at Florida State. He's seen what Bobby Bowden has done and to gain his success over the years, and he just continues to build upon that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much spot on. I mean, and one of the things that I think you kind of touched on as well is Mark Richt is a recruiter. He was fantastic at Florida State, and it seems like he draws really good prospects in, not just on the chip scale, but also on guys who produce.
Oh, you're 100% right. I mean, there's been a few guys that haven't come in and produced like the Georgia thought they would, but on the most part, you really can't say he missed on a recruit. I mean, especially the last 2 or 3 years when they really decided to go after the guys and put the fences around the state of Georgia, and, you know, starting with the Dream Team and then getting last year's team in there, those guys came in and contributed right away. So I think you're exactly right. When he gets out there and sets his mind to recruiting the best players, then he gets not only him, but, you know, Todd Grantham, that defense, and he's turning into one heck of a recruiter as well. He's doing it on the defensive side and just bringing in these top recruits left and right.
Hey, Carl, this is Chris. I got a quick question for you.
All right, Chris.
How did the top running back recruit, Keith Marshall, look during the spring game? And kind of a second part to that question is, how do you think they will use him this year? I mean, do you think they're going to try to use him and Crowell as kind of a 1-2 punch?
Well, he didn't play. He twinged a hamstring about a week before G-Day. So we had Georgia had several players that sat out of the game, and Keith Marshall was one of them. But I think if they don't redshirt him for some reason, I mean, I think he if he warrants the playing time, then he'll be in there and he'll be used to spell Isaiah Crowell if Gurley gets into that situation too. But I think they like having the stable of running backs as they have over the years, and I think they like having the bigger guys. You know, Carlton Thomas, who transferred recently, seeing, you know, the writing on the wall with all these running backs coming in, he did a good job when he was in there, but it just seemed like he was a little bit too diminutive to be able to go up the middle when they put him in there sometimes. I think Keith Marshall, Todd Gurley, and Isaiah Crowell all complement each other well, and then Richard Samuel and Ken Malcolm, who will probably carry more of the heavy load on the power running game, that they will also contribute. So you're going to have five running backs who can actually tote the rock this season for the Georgia Bulldogs. But I think Marshall, I think what they would like to do with him, if Isaiah Crowell produces and shows that he's going to produce and not have the issues that he had last season, is maybe put a redshirt year on him, and that way they have another year with him once, you know, Crowell leaves or whenever that happens. And so they could use Marshall and Gurley kind of similar to the way they used Crowell and Carlton Thomas last year.
Okay, Carl, I have one more question for you, and I just want to know what you think. You know, with the conference expansion that's been going on, SEC to 14 teams, what were your feelings of possibly Auburn and Georgia not playing anymore on a year-end, a yearly basis?
That couldn't happen. You know, I mean, it's been going on for so long. I think it's similar. You know, there's different rivalries throughout that they knew they had to keep intact. And I think Georgia was fine with losing Alabama if Georgia was able to keep Auburn, just because of that rivalry dated back so far. I think the SEC took all that into consideration and said, okay, we have to have these certain rivalries play, and Georgia-Auburn is one of them, because it's one of the biggest ones in the SEC, dating back for years and years and years. So I don't think that ever would have happened, and nor do I think it could happen. I mean, I wouldn't agree with it if it did, to answer your question.
I agree. I couldn't imagine a college football season without Auburn playing Georgia and Alabama. You know, those two teams have to be there on that schedule, because Georgia and Auburn's played longer than any two teams in the South. And then you have the Iron Bowl, so I'm glad it stayed, because I want to keep tradition, because that's one thing about college football. You have to keep the tradition of these games, like between the hedges and then coming to Auburn. That's a huge game, you know, almost at the end of the season, every season. And it always means something. It's like two years ago, Georgia had Auburn down 14 points. You know, they were trying to go to a national championship game, and Georgia was 5-6, I think, or something like that. But it's always a great game, and the total score between those two teams is amazingly close when you play that many times. But I'm glad they kept the rivalry going, and I want to say thank you for coming on and joining us, and I hope you come back soon.
Well, I appreciate it. I definitely will. Just give me a little bit of notice, and we'll definitely do it again. I appreciate the time, Brian and Chris, and I think there was Trey on there as well.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a great evening.
You too.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, sir. Yeah, that was a great call. I appreciate Carl coming out from 680 The Fan. Great guest. Big Georgia guy, covers the Braves, covers the Georgia Bulldogs, covers some Georgia baseball, actually, and we didn't get a chance to cover it. We were about out of time. for that. So next time we get him on, we'll cover some college baseball, hopefully soon. So welcome, Chris Ricketts, to the show.
How's it going, Brian and Trey? Y'all doing all right tonight?
Yeah, I do well.
Yeah, good. How's your son doing? Is he better?
Yeah, he's doing a little bit better. He's starting to get a little rowdy, so you can tell he's feeling a little bit better.
Well, good. Well, we have 30 minutes left in the show, and Chris, we discussed baseball a little bit, but we want to go to the NFL draft that's coming up, and we want to talk about the running backs and wide receivers that are going to be coming up in the draft to be drafted. And Trey, the other night we talked about the quarterbacks, and we both were in agreement that Andrew Luck was going to be the best player in the draft, and he's not going to be a bust. So let's start off with Trey. Tell me what you think of the running backs in this draft.
Well, Brian, it's actually not a very it's not the kind of running back draft we've seen recently. A lot of, you know, where you have guys who you're drafting in your fantasy football team immediately the next year, you know, because or this year, because there's so much talent coming in. And this year, it's easy who the big guy is, and it's Richardson, and he's a top 10 guy, and he's going to be good in the NFL. Other than that, I don't know that there's a guy out there who you can look at and go, he's NFL ready now, and he's going to instantly become a factor. I think there's a lot of guys who will get playing time, and maybe, you know, will become a factor at some point. But there's no really legitimate guy like Richardson or something, you know, who are going to come out and make an immediate NFL impact that I see out there.
Chris, what do you think, bud?
Yeah, I mean, Trey's spot on. I mean, this draft is really only got one, you know, NFL ready type running back in it, and that's Mr. Richardson. And you know, he's definitely worthy of a top five pick. You know, he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the work ethic. You know, this guy is he's an absolute beast. I mean, he has probably 0% body fat. I mean, he's just a gym rat. So he's gonna make a very productive running back at the next level, and he's gonna provide an immediate impact to whoever gets him. You know, the rest of the guys, you know, there's been a lot of buzz about Doug Martin, and I don't see any of these other guys making an immediate impact. I mean, best case scenario, they're going to go to a team where they have to split carries with another back. They're not going to be the featured back. So it's all going to be dependent on where all these second tier guys are drafted, who they're playing for, and you know whether they get the carries or not. The one guy that I kind of like that I think a lot of people maybe kind of be sleeping on a little bit, and it's kind of hard for me to believe, you know, because when I went to the national championship game, this guy was just unbelievable. But LaMichael James, you know, I really like him. I think he can be kind of like a Darren Sproles type runner. You know, very quick, pretty powerful. You know, can run between the tackles a little bit. Probably needs to bulk up just a little bit. But he's kind of my, you know, late round sleeper. You know, most mock drafts I'm seeing is projecting him to go like the third round. So, who do you like, Tarvin?
Well, I'm with you guys. Richardson's obviously the unanimous number one. But one thing that concerns me about Trent Richardson is staying healthy, because this guy, he runs so hard. He never takes a play off. And when you run that hard, but he is in good shape, I have to admit, but you're prone to injury. So I want to see him go to a team that has another running back where they could do two running backs and keep him fresh, because this guy is a monster. I mean, he's probably one of the best running backs I've seen in years. I saw him come out of high school, and I saw the training video on Trent Richardson, who was running on the railroad tracks. He looked like Mr. T or someone. I mean, this kid is amazing. And I know I'm an Auburn fan, but I have to give kudos to Trent Richardson, because that cat, he's a lot better than Mark Ingram ever thought about being. And Mark Ingram won the Heisman, but Trent Richardson is the number one pick in the draft, but there is one running back in this draft, guys, that I know you might laugh, but I think he might be NFL ready, and his name is Robert Turbin. He's out of Utah State. Have you seen the arms on this guy and the legs? I mean, this guy is ready. I mean, I think he's one of those running backs that could make an immediate impact.
It'll be interesting to see who it goes to, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's on the board at 10th as of a running back. So, but you know, this is like Trey said, this is not like you're licking your chops. It's like a quarterback. It's not deep at all either. So, I mean, there's a couple of players in this draft that'll be immediate studs, but there's a running back out of Virginia Tech, David Wilson. I like him.
Yeah.
I think he's a bruiser. I think he'll be successful. And Michael James, I just don't think he's big enough, guys, to be in the NFL and be a reliable every down running back, even splitting carries. I think he'll be good on special teams and different things like that. But he is a great athlete. But I just think his size is going to hurt him.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tarvin. Actually, if I had to pick one other guy to draft, and I know that the guy out of Boise State that Chris just talked about is projected at a low one, early two. But I think at Virginia Tech, you know, you hit it right on the spot. I mean, he looks good in college, and he looks like a guy who could play a little bit. But you know, he's not going to be a guy who's going to take over all the carries for a team. But it looks like he's a guy who can help out immediately. Maybe I will see. But yeah, I'll tell you, you talk about wide receivers, Tarvin. I think we all know Justin Blackmon is clear in a way, probably the best wide receiver. In the draft, I mean, over Michael Floyd and Kendall Wright, who are all supposed to go first round. But, you know, the guy out there who I think, you know, it could come out later is a guy at Appalachian State, Brian Quick. I don't know if anybody saw anything from this guy. He's a low third-round pick, played at some no-name Appalachian State, but he's 6'4", and he runs pretty good routes from some of the film I've seen. He might be a guy who sleeps a little bit and then he comes out, and again, in 3 years, as wide receivers mature, who could really impact a team later on down the road.
Yeah.
Chris, go ahead, bud.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, Trey hit it right on the head. You know, Justin Blackmon, clearly the number one receiver in this draft, you know. And I kind of like, you know, I know the guy that's really shooting up the boards right now and you know, kind of – Stephen Hill from Georgia Tech, you know, he's had a great combine, runs, you know, really good routes, and, you know, Georgia Tech's had that pedigree at receiver over the last couple of years at producing, you know, Calvin Johnson and Demaryius Thomas. That's the one guy that I'm really interested to see where he goes. I think most mock drafts have him projected around the second, maybe even possibly late in the first, you know, so... I think he could be definitely in line. You know, he ran a 4.3 40, so he's got that straight line speed that you need. The question will be, you know, which team is willing to take that chance, you know, because Georgia Tech, you know, it's a triple option type offense, and they didn't throw the ball to him that much. But, you know, he had a couple of huge games against some, you know, fairly weak opponents. So I'm really interested to see where he goes.
Well, Calvin Johnson was from Georgia Tech too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'm gonna tell you guys, there's one receiver in this draft that, you know, you have Blackmon. I mean, that's a guaranteed number one. I'm not trying to say he's not, but Alshon Jeffrey, he lost 20 pounds. He's running like a 4.45. This kid is amazing. And when he was in college 2 years ago, I was like, this kid is gonna be amazing. And I still think he might be the steal of the draft with the receivers. I know Blackman's number one, guys, and I admit that. But as far as Kendall Wright, and I just don't think I would draft him ahead of Alshon Jeffrey. And I know I wouldn't draft Floyd ahead of him. So most people have him as the fifth receiver off the board. Trey, what do you think about Alshon Jeffrey?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you in some way. Just because I don't think Malcolm Floyd. I think I would take Malcolm Floyd. He's got big guy. He's got good hands overall. But I do think when you talk about Kendall Wright, you know, that's actually not a bad gamble there. I'm not really sold on Baylor's Kendall Wright. Not a big guy. I mean, not saying that 5'10 guys haven't had success in the NFL at wide receiver, but overall, I'm not sold on his skills, and that's kind of why I liked the guy from Appalachian State, Brian Quick, because of his size, and I think size matters when you're talking about NFL-ready wide receivers. But yeah, Alshon Jeffries has really been rising up. He's got good size, 6'3", he ran good at the combine. Yeah, that's not a bad pick there, Tarvin.
Yeah, and what a difference a year makes, you know. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey, if he were able to come out, you know, the previous year, I mean, he would have definitely been a mid-first-round pick, if not closer to the top end of the first round. And it seemed like last year, you know, South Carolina, they were in a lot of turmoil as far as, you know, on the offensive side of the ball. And I think he had some nagging injuries and seemed like he put on a little bit of weight. And I know that's the one big concern I've been hearing about is, you know, he came in at the combine at around 215 to 220. But, you know, what's really going to be his playing weight? And, you know, there were reports last year that he was playing around, you know, upwards of 230. And so I think that's going to scare a lot of GMs because when you're talking, you know, that's almost tight end type weight there. And so the question is going to be, can he separate? That's always been the question with me, with Alshon Jeffrey is, you know, is he going to have the ability to separate in the open field? And that's what you have to do at the NFL level. You know, you can be a physical receiver, but if you can't separate, you're not going to be very productive in the NFL. So that'll be the big question going forward with Alshon. But I'm kind of with both of y'all. I mean, I think if you're going to take a chance on a guy, I mean, you've seen what he's been able to do, you know, in previous years. And, I mean, the guy can just absolutely dominate. And so I think it would actually be a smart pick for some team to gamble on.
Well, Chris, Chris and Trey, if you miss some big receiver like Blackmon, there's two receivers in this draft that if I was a GM, I'd be looking at right now. And one's the Arkansas Greg Childs. He's 6'3", and a big receiver. Man, this kid is amazing. I'm so surprised that he's not predicted higher than 20th as a receiver. And Ryan Broyles from Oklahoma. I'm real impressed with those two, and I think they're steals in this draft.
You know, Tarvin, you bring up a good point, but I think what you're going to see a little bit more, and actually if you've studied the draft any, what you've seen is GMs actually take more of a chance on tight ends, it seems, recently than those lower receivers. And maybe that's why we're seeing so many of those receivers, you know, down this year is because of the tight end and how valuable it's become in the NFL. You can almost get away with a lower class third receiver than you can without a number one tight end. So I think maybe a lot of teams are trying to figure that out right now.
Yeah.
Arkansas had Joe Adams too, Chris. You remember him?
Yeah, exactly.
Joe Adams.
Yeah, that's who I was going to kind of bring up. You know, Joe Adams was kind of one of my sleeper picks for, and I think he'd be excellent in the slot. And Trey, you brought up a great point because, you know, that has been the trend in recent drafts is to draft these tight ends ahead of these quote unquote, you know, like possession receivers. It seems like that tight end is taking over that kind of function on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, I like Joe Adams as well. You know, he's very quick and can just make you miss. And I think he's actually, just depending on where he goes, I mean, he could almost turn into like a Wes Welker type, you know, great hands, great in the open field and just make you look silly.
And played against SEC opponents week in and week out. And, you know, that's complex defenses you go up against every week in the SEC. And Arkansas put the fear of God in people when they line up on the offensive side of the ball. And it's just, I'm just very impressed with Arkansas's receivers that came out of this draft. And I think if you're a smart GM, if you have other needs besides receiver, try not to take that big gamble on a top receiver. Not a gamble, they're a sure thing almost, but solidify that offensive line and defensive line and then go out and get that receiver because they're going to be available in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
So,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Brian.
Oh, Chris, go ahead, Bud.
Oh, and another guy, you know, I really would keep an eye on is a kid out of Rutgers named Mohamed Sanu. And, you know, Rutgers has been a kind of a hotbed for some NFL talent. You know, Kenny Britt played there. This guy reminds me a lot of Kenny Britt. I mean, he's, you know, the only problem with him is his 40 time. You know, it was around a 4.5 40. But the guy has very good hands, and he's a very good route runner. Seems to be very athletic. So that's another name you might want to keep an eye on there.
Trey, do you have another sleeper receiver for us?
You know, Carmen, I think, and I hit on this a little bit before, I think before I took one of those sleeper receivers, I think there's a couple of tight ends out there that I would easily, I would take. You know, and I talked about the kid from Appalachian State, but, you know, not to move the conversation on to tight ends, there's a couple of lower-ranked guys who I think really could actually make an impact and just as well as a slot receiver who you're going to get in the third or fourth round at best, I think, right now with the tight end. Excuse me, with the wide receiver talent, I don't think it's that high this year for wide receiver. But I think at tight end, you got some pretty good guys out there. One of the guys who's actually a little lower ranked, and if you think about the tight ends, you think about Aaron Hernandez, you know, that caliber guy, they weren't taken, you know, they weren't real sought after. Nobody talked about it in the draft like it was the greatest pick ever, but you certainly watch these guys in the postseason and realize they win games. And one of the things, one of the guys I'm looking at is Rhett Ellison from Southern California. USC certainly is puts together a lot of pro-ready guys. He's not even I think he's maybe a 10th or so in the tight end, but he's a huge guy. He's 6'5", 250, and he's got a pretty good hand. He's a guy I'm watching as a tight end who might make an impact. And there's also a kid from Louisiana Lafayette, Ladarius Green, who's probably about the third or fourth. I've seen him in the fifth tight ends. But those two guys, I think, really make an impact on a team, a lot of the way that the Patriots have been using their tight ends.
All right, guys. Well, let's shift gears. That's a good conversation. Wednesday night we have a show at 9 Eastern, and we're gonna hit the draft right before it starts. But this was a great conversation, guys. You guys have some great picks. And I want to move. We have 14 minutes left in the show, and I want to talk about Calipari, the Kentucky Wildcats. As you know, all five starters have declared for the NBA, and the big rumor is that Calipari could be going to the Knicks. And I know Chris and I have touched on this, but it seems like the rumor is heated up more and more. So, Chris, what do you think is going on in Calipari's mind? Do you think he's going to leave Kentucky?
I know I was maybe the only guy on the fence, or the only guy that was predicting that this may happen, but I heard grumblings that, you know, the New York Knicks would come calling for Mr. Calipari, and, you know, they're going to offer him a lot of money because they have got the stage, they have got the blank check to write. And, you know, when I heard that all five guys were going to declare for the, you know, the NBA draft at the same time, I was like, this could you know, be extra fuel to the fire, so to speak. And, you know, I really hadn't heard anything since you just mentioned it. But, yeah, I really think this sets up well for Calipari. You know, he had you know, been with the Nets before and had one good year there. I think they actually made the playoffs. And then, of course, the next year, you know, they got off to a bad start, and they ended up making a coaching change, I think, right there at the end of the season. But, you know, the question will be, is the fire there for Calipari, or is the desire there for Calipari to win that NBA championship? And so, you know, now he's got a national championship, so, you know, I guess we'll find out, you know, how much this Kentucky job really means to him.
Right.
You know, I'll be honest, other than you guys really talking about it, I haven't actually heard those kind of rumors. I do think, I mean, obviously when you have all five of your starters declare for the NBA draft, maybe they do know something the rest of us don't, so maybe you guys are on to something. But I also know that Kentucky is, once again, leading the pack in recruiting. Going into this signing period, and they certainly look really good, and another really good class. So, you know, whether he's leaving or not, certainly kids are still coming to Kentucky. I mean, it's not like a lot of the top kids aren't coming. So either he's sending mixed signals to guys, and maybe even all of us included, or he may be coming back.
Well, you know, I look at Calipari, and when I watched him coach the last 2 years, it just looked like he was having fun. And you don't see many coaches these days that have fun. I think Calipari is a great recruiter, and he's a great mind. I think these kids enjoy playing for him, and they know they're going to the NBA. So if you have 1 year to play, You know, you can play there. I think Calipari would be this time of in his life at his age. I think he would be foolish to go back to the NBA. I mean, you can't have fun coaching in the NBA, guys. These guys make more than you do. They don't listen to anybody. So if I'm Calipari, I'm sitting in Kentucky, and I'm going to be worshipped just like he is by all these Kentucky fans, and I'm just going to win national championship after national championship. And if I'm lucky, I have several players that might stay for two seasons. Because could you imagine how good Kentucky would be if starting last year, the year before, all those guys came back? Could you imagine? They could be probably the best team of all time if they could do two or three seasons in a row and keep players.
Imagine if Brandon Knight had came back last year.
Wow.
Yeah, that'd be pretty scary.
But, yeah, Tarvin, they actually, you know, it's John Calipari he's on his fourth straight national recruiting title, and he won it this year. So, in 2012, they're again the number one recruiting class. They got the number two prospect in the nation, Nerlens Noel, which I'm sure we'll pronounce correctly come March next year. You know, so again, another class of just top ranked guys. He gets, you know, the number two prospect, the number eight prospect, a power forward. I mean, the number 14 prospect. I mean, in basketball, that really matters when you only start at five and you get, you know, of the top 15 players in the country, you have four of them.
Yeah. Makes life a little bit
easier. Reminds me of Michigan. Yeah, my reminds me of Michigan's Fab Five, Chris.
Exactly.
Remember how good they were. It's like all of a sudden it matters in basketball. Like Trey said, you only have five starters. And in basketball, you can change your program in 1 year of recruiting. And in football, it doesn't work like that. But in basketball, man, Calipari built a machine. And if I was him, and I think he makes, what, $4 million, $5 million per season probably, somewhere around in there.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Knicks will come in and offer him probably about $8 million, but is $3 million really going to make a difference in the guy's life to change? I mean, it wouldn't mind, of course, but he's having fun, guys. And college basketball is exciting. The NBA, honestly, I don't understand why they even have coaches. They shouldn't even have coaches out there. But they should just let them play. You know, but let's go off to we are running out of time. But Michael Jordan is an owner, guys. We're 8 minutes left. Michael Jordan has killed the Bobcats, man. I mean, I love Michael Jordan, best basketball player of all time, but he has just destroyed this team. And if I'm Davis for Kentucky, I'm like, I don't want to come to your team. You know, I'm gonna come out in the media and say I will not go play for the Bobcats. Trey, what do you think about the Bobcats, what Jordan has done? It's terrible.
Well, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint what he has done for the Bobcats because, to me, there's been no real strategy. I can't tell when the draft comes around what they're doing in the free agency. They don't seem to really be a player. So, you know, at least with a team like the Mavericks, who you and I talked about earlier, we all know that they're going after free agency, and they really don't care what happens this year. They made the playoffs fantastic. So we all know that they're going to throw every bit of money they have at Dwight Howard and Williams out of the Nets. But the Bobcats, does anybody know? And if anybody knows, please call a post on the Internet. Someone tell me what it is this team is doing, because I have no clue. I have no clue from the draft, no clue in the free agency market. All I see from them is they seem to lose a lot and not really care because they don't seem to make any moves about it.
Yeah, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking, I've got a question for you guys. Who is the worst GM/owner/upper management, Isaiah Thomas or Michael Jordan?
Isaiah Thomas.
I mean, because to me, it just amazes me. You know, you take two guys like Isaiah and Jordan, who are just so awesome in their prime, you know, and contributed so much to the game of basketball, and yet they cannot, for some reason, you know, translate that over in the GM role in acquiring talent. I don't know if it's just their standards are so high for players and, you know, they're just overanalyzing everything, but obviously whatever they're doing is not working. And
it's Chris, I almost stopped right there, Chris. It's not their calling, man. I think they're not called into that job, and they have no creativity.
Yeah, and definitely they don't. They just have. You're probably right on there. You know, they have this one track mind of, and maybe it gets back to that. You know, nobody has. Or, you know, not everybody else has the same work ethic as I did as a player. But, you know, I mean, Jordan, I mean, just the monumental bust he's had, you know, when he drafted Kwame Brown number one overall. And, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And you just wonder, I mean, eventually the law of averages says you have to hit on somebody. And I just don't understand. I mean, like Trey said, you know, you tell me one guy on the Bobcats roster that is really an average NBA player. I mean, I don't see one.
Seven wins. That says it all, Trey and Chris. 7 wins. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, that's not good. And maybe Chris and Tarvin, maybe they got lucky this year and they drafted Kemba Walker. I don't know if he's going to be that great, but I can tell you over the last 3 years, there's been nothing out of that team. No solid draft pick who's a contributor. I mean, Gerald Henderson, you know, he was okay. He's not really panning out to be that great of an NBA player. You know, maybe it is they just don't know how to evaluate talent as a GM. And who knows? Maybe they'll turn it around, but I don't see a team that's close to turning it around. I think Kemba Walker is a solid NBA player. I just don't think he's the player that can build a franchise around. And, you know, maybe some of it's luck. Maybe they just need to win the number one overall pick and just take who everyone knows is going to be the number one pick this year. But until then, I just don't see this team with any sort of insight or drive to actually put together five guys on the court who are going to win more than 10 games.
Yeah.
And Davis is not ready to, you know, if he came to Charlotte, and he's not a man yet. And to play down low in the NBA, you have to be a man. So I don't think he's going to change them, you know, all of a sudden they get Davis and now they're in the playoffs. I just don't see that happening. I think they've dug themselves in the hole. It could take years to get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to happen anytime soon. And you're right, Tarvin. If they do happen to win the lottery and they're able to draft Anthony Davis, I mean, it's going to be a couple years before this guy. He can contribute on the defensive side of the ball, but – as far as offensively, I mean, he's still got to polish his offensive skills up a little bit, and he's definitely going to have to bulk up a little bit because, like you said, Tarvin, playing in the NBA, you know, you're telling me he's going to be able to take Dwight Howard, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, he's going to take – it's going to definitely take some time in order for him to develop to any type of productive player at the next level.
I totally agree, and you know, I just if I'm Davis, I'm begging them not to take me. I'm calling Michael Jordan now on the telephone and saying, guys, please do not draft me. Please lose the lottery, something, you know. So, you know, it's possible for one of these great teams. You know, just imagine if you're the Lakers or somebody, and you get that ball and you have the first pick. Could you imagine that? And Davis going to somewhere like the Lakers, that would be amazing. I just don't want to see him in Charlotte be a Bobcat. Because I like the guy. I think he has a great career, a great future. I want to see him develop. But Michael Jordan probably gambled away all the winnings in their organization. That's probably why they don't have much money.
Yeah, I mean, that organization and the other organization I see, Tarvin, that has just been terrible is the Raptors. I mean, you don't mind – draft pick after draft bust. I mean, and the Raptors won 22 games this year. And that's great, but 22 games, that's what they win every year.
22 games. But I think the Bobcats will go down as the worst team in NBA history this season. And that's bad to have your name tagged to that. Because if you're Michael Jordan, you're going to be the greatest player of all time, and you're going to be the worst GM of all time, you know? So it's just kind of...
They're going to be so bad, they're going to lose the lottery.
Yeah,
I agree with that. And, guys, we're under a minute left, and I want to thank Carl for coming on. It was a great interview, giving us a lot of information about Georgia in a short amount of time, and I'm going to schedule him back to get him on at least 30 minutes next time. especially when we get closer to football season. And also the Braves are playing. He covers them too, so we'll get him on. And again, Wednesday night, 9 Eastern, we have a show. I'm excited about, and I'm sure there'll be some.
Tarvin and Trey, you ought to definitely come on and join us.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And all the listeners out there today, thank you. We had a lot today. So all the calls in, I appreciate it. And any final thought? 20 seconds left.
Nah, just looking forward to Wednesday night and just invite everybody to come out and listen to us and weigh in.
Yeah, my final thought, Tarvin, is I'll vehemently disagree with you. Phillies fans, don't panic yet. That's my final thought.
Okay. Well, guys, enjoy the week, and we'll see you Wednesday night.
All right,
brother.
Have a good one.
All right, see ya. Bye.